Let's have a chat to a man who is much loved in the racing industry, and he's been a stalwart of the Sydney scene for more than half a century. And I think he probably shocked a few people earlier in the week when he announced his retirement. His final runner will be this Saturday. It's great to chat to Pat Webster. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Now, a little birdie tells me you might be suffering a little bit today. There might have been a big lunch on yesterday, is that right?
Yeah, well, Mick Doyle, who the famous restaurant Doyle's, he puts a do on every year, and he's been asking Ronnie Quinton and myself to go for the last 2 years, and I've said to Ronnie, you remind me or I'll remind you, and we both keep forgetting. So this year we did remember, and we went and had a lovely lunch yesterday.
And I believe one of your neighbours might have helped you out with a lift home, Singo, is that right?
Oh, God, I don't know if they helped me out. There was big Rolls. The last thing I remember was the big new Rolls Royce, which the steering wheel's probably worth to my eye like shit, but it's very, very comfortable.
So he chauffeured you home, did he? That's good.
No, he chauffeured it. He's got a chauffeur.
All right.
Yeah, so he drove me home. He dropped Singo off at his place and then dropped me off, yeah.
Well, this might be a little window into what retirement might be like, Pat. Might be a lot of long lunches on the agenda coming up.
No, it won't be. No, that was the swan song yesterday. I met up with some lovely people, the Johnny Taps of the world and the Kenny Callenders and Max Presnells and some beautiful people and a big part of racing, but a bit like Dad's Army at the luncheon where no one's getting any younger.
Pat, how long have you been mulling over the idea of retirement?
Well, really since Clapper. Just as I said to someone, when Clapper was there and you go onto the track, it was like riding in on a magic carpet, and then after he went, it was like driving a B-double. And that was just it, really. It was just so to be up there with him and then to sort of, cut back and small the string, and just comes a time. I just didn't have my heart in it, and I didn't want to do the wrong thing by my clients. I did have Jerry and people like that, so I had to talk to him, had to talk to Chrissy, then had to talk to Jerry, and decide to pull the pin.
And your wife, Chrissy, how did she take the news?
I think Chrissy's good. She's one of the reasons, as you know, we've been married 48 years, and behind every successful man, there's a good woman. So, no, she was happy with the decision. She could see what I was going through, and she sort of knew that I've sort of might have lost that competitiveness, and she knew the time was right too, so she was 100% behind me, as always.
We'll talk about where it all began and your career highlights, but what is the next chapter going to hold for you, Pat? Have you thought about what retirement might look like?
Yeah, it looks okay. I still do, I'm Gossard Races today, mentoring the apprentices, and then I still do my drugs and alcohol with Racing New South Wales, and we've got a great concept called Racing Mates, which really we put a lot of time and effort into, and that helps, a lot of the unknown people in racing and the strappers and people falling on hard times, and that's one of my passions. It's also one of Peter Vallandi's passions, which is important because he's the man, and that takes up a fair bit of my time. So there'll be 2 or 3 days a week that I'll be doing that. So, and with the farm, we've got 58 acres. I can assure you there's always something to do on the farm.
That mentoring role that you've become so synonymous with in New South Wales and your help with the drug and alcohol addiction, where did that all begin, Pat? Where did that you first find yourself getting involved in that?
Well, I got involved because I had a son who had an addiction who I'm pleased to say is going really good at the moment. And I often thought that, it's very hard for people that have got a problem to reach out. And when they do reach out, the necessary help's not there. Like you know, they can't get into the rehab, they can't get help, and it's good that we're in a racing here in New South Wales with what we've got in place seems to be successful. You know, like there's a trainer that recently got his license back last Friday, Luke Griffith. He trains at Scone, very, very good trainer. He hit a hurdle, so we put him in a rehab, and then he come back and sort of got his life back together and got his license back last Friday. So he'll keep working in the mines and put a couple in work. And I met him and his partner last week. So, you know, then people who would have in the old days would have slipped through the cracks, but now with what we got in place, you know, there's a career that we saved and he's back in racing and he'll do good because he's a great trainer.
Are you almost just as proud of what you've been able to do there with what you were able to do in your actual training career?
Oh, yes. But I can't do it without the help, you know. Like, someone like myself, you've got to have help. And with Racing New South Wales, they're 100% behind it and they help. If you haven't got that help, you can't do it. You've got to have support, and you've got to have support. And no doubt, Christine went through what we went through with our son, and she's a great help too. She's a great person to have sit alongside you to, you know, she see what's going on, and you talk to people, and she comes to some of the meetings, and she's a great help. But between the two of us, we summed the situation up pretty good. And like I say, it's good to be able to help someone. It's just sometimes I feel like I'm Santa Claus. What I can do, or you know, what you can do, give to some people. It's a great thing.
Talking with Pat Webster, who announced his retirement earlier in the week after 55 years in racing. Pat, can you remember where it all began, where it all started, and how you got involved in racing?
Yeah, well, I was working on the wharves, and I sit with. There was a Chinese restaurant at the Yard. They called it the Rusty Shovel, and all the racing people used to be there. I was sitting there and dinner with Chrissy one night, and I was looking at my payslip from the wharves, and I'd done a double, and I said, "Jesus!" I said, "Look at all this tax bill I've got to pay." I said, "It's ridiculous." She said, "Well, you always wanted to take out a trainer's license. Well, take that out, and you won't have to pay tax because you won't earn anything." but started off from there, and I had a lovely client, a guy called Tony Porter. He gave me my first horse at called Young Sally, and I got the stables off the Cathy Munro and the wife of the famous Darby Munro. So I got eight boxes in Doncaster Avenue, because you couldn't get on course then, and just all started from there, and here we are today.
How different was the training and racing scene back then compared to what it's like today?
Oh, so changed. We had a Wednesday meeting, Saturday meeting, and the provincial on a Thursday. That's all changed. We got twilight meetings. We got night meetings now. We got Fridays. We got Saturdays. We got Sundays. We got everything now. So that's just. I was talking to Ronnie Quinton yesterday how much it has changed. And in then days, your main opposition was TJ Smith. And you could dodge him. You could, get one at Newcastle or Kevlar, midweek you could dodge TJ. But now the competitiveness with the Snaydens, the Hawkses, the James Cummings, it's a different ball game altogether.
Waller.
And it's harder.
Is it hard to make a living? Because throughout your career, you've had plenty of good horses, but you've always had a relatively small team, haven't you?
Yeah, no, we're going to think the match we have had, like, it was 12 at one time, and I've been so blessed with sometimes we only have eight, and like Clapper come along, we only had six, and Happy Clapper comes along. So people say luck, I've just been blessed, don't know why, but been so lucky to always, Abinicio, you know, one of TJ, one of five or six groups, I've just been, thank God you're here. Same owner as Happy Clapper. He won, he's a really good horse. I've just been so lucky in that to have that small string, but always had that one good or handy horse at a certain time, which, helps.
You started out riding, though, didn't you? You were an apprentice?
Yeah, I was apprenticed in the start of the with the first lady trainer, Betty Lane, the first woman, and she shifted to Randwick, but had nothing to do with it. She was the first woman trainer to get a number one trainer's license. But I started off with her, and then I come down and I experienced the Bernie Burns at Randwick, and you know, first ride at Randwick, won the Carrington Stakes on Medieval Maestro. Had quite a bit of luck. Yeah, I had quite a bit of luck, but then I had a really bad fall at Rose Hill, really bad, and it really knocked me about. That sort of was the end of things, you know, because I've always been a relatively big person, bigger now, but found it very hard to keep my weight down, and so then sort of done a few things, got on the horse, and then, as I said, and then one night just decided to take out a trainer's license, and the rest has been a long journey, but a very interesting one. Had a few bumps and different things, a few tragic things happened, like I had very close to Noli Barker, who had a fall in a trial at Ramming Hill, Kenny Russell, the great Kenny Russell, David Green, who was Prince of Theo, no relation to Theo. The trouble is you get close to people, and when something tragic like that happens, it does affect you in certain ways, but you know, I suppose you grow to get used to it.
I was going to ask you, back in those days when you were apprentice and riding, who were the greats, and who do you think's the best jockey that you competed against? I suppose that's probably where your mateship with Ronnie Quinton was born out of as well.
Yeah. Well, more so later on with Ronnie with the training thing, but we've funny fingers with Singo and Mick Doyle and Maxi Preston. We only talking about it yesterday, how great the great George Moore was. There was only, a different era to what, James McDonald's and Huey Bowman's are, but he was just a great rider, and Apple George Mully, and it was great to be able to sit down with Ronnie and have a talk about the old days, because they were great riders.
Who taught you your training techniques and capabilities when you first began as a trainer?
Well, you relate to this one. I was apprenticed to Bernie, and the great George Hanlon used to stop with us all the time. And I used to ride his horses, work with my family, a man, lawman. Oh, there's so classic mission. There were so many. He had some great horses, and I learned everything I think just by riding work with George and how he fed. He fed huge, he fed big, and he never worked his horses hard. He always raced them into condition rather than try and gallop them in condition. So I really modelled myself on the great George Hanlon, and I'm glad I did, because I think it's one of the reasons that I've had success is because what I learned of George.
Mm. Do you think training's changed much over the years? There's a lot more scientific data available now with heart rate monitors, and you test the genomes of horses, some trainers do, to find out whether they're sprinters or stayers. How do you see training evolving over that 50-year period?
Yeah, I think Les Bridge hit it on the head the other day of Classic Mission. You know, what's in the genes comes out. I think there's more knowledgeable about that sort of thing on the breeding side. As far as training's concerned, the actual training that you put into a horse, I don't think that'll ever change, and it can't change, you know, because the feeding's changed a lot. We base ourselves more on a sweep feed what they call a sweep feed that you buy and it's already mixed and everything now. That's all changed a bit. But as far as the training of horses, it can't change because, you know, you can only do so much with them. You don't have to be a genius to work it out. But they if they're well fed and they got well shod, and you look after them and don't work them too hard, there's no secret to it. That's it. Keep it simple, and it'll work for you. But I suppose, you know, when you look at all the breeding and all that, that's where it's changed.
You've seen up close and worked alongside some of the greats, from TJ to Bart, and we've got Chris Waller now and John Hawkes. Who do you think's been or who do you think is the best trainer you've seen or had anything to do with?
Well, I think Bart Cummings was, TJ was a great trainer, but he had numbers and worked his horses pretty hard, so they were, you know, TJ trained him, they were Spit Race Day. Bar Cummings was a great trainer, but I think someone with that will go past them all, barring anything unforeseen, will be Chris Waller. I think he's an amazing trainer. I think he's an amazing person. For him to do what he's done here, he runs a stable in Queensland with great success. He runs a stable in Melbourne with great success. Who knows? And, you know, he's relatively young, and I've been very fortunate to... I was the first Australian that Chris ever met when he came over.
Really?
He even came over with Paddy Bussard and stopped with Castletown and a couple of others at our stables. And used to come up home and have dinner with Chrissy and me, and he was only young at the time. And to see where he is now, I've seen his whole journey. It's amazing. And I just take my hat off to the bloke.
Back then, did you see something in a young Chris Waller that would have eventuated into what he's become today?
No, but he was a very good track work rider, and he was very quiet. But I did notice one thing. Paddy had a couple of horses over here, and he just left it. He was never late at work, morning or afternoon, and always taking their temperatures. He never left a stone unturned. And he was a very young person then too. So when I think back, when you asked that question, he was very, very then. He was very, very dedicated. Like a lot of people bring a horse over and the strappers get out and on the ranch and used to get to the Donny and play up and get late to work the next morning because there's no one there to supervise. But he never drank or he never smoked. He's just full on dedicated to them horses. And a very modest person.
Yeah. You mentioned the horses. For you, is that what the love has been about, the animal itself?
Well, it still is. You know, we've got a couple of retired ones here, thank God you, DD Flyer. Still, it's an amazing thing that I had a journo ring me the other day, and he's got a little boy that's got autism. He said, can we call into the farm on the way to the Central Coast? He said, but a little boy... You know, I think it'd be good for him to come and have a look at the horses. So we got some carrots and, you know, he'd hold the carrot and the horse would have a bite and he'd drop the carrot and he'd run around the circle laughing his head off. So to me, the horse can do so much for the healing of different things with humans, like our returned soldiers and different things like that. I think they're a beautiful animal and... you know, if they're treated the right way, look at Flapper now, he's up with Red Zill at what they call Bart's Farm, what's Princess Farm that Racing New South Wales bought. And I got a video for yesterday of his strapper. She went up there that used to ride him, Ainsley Fox, and it was beautiful. You know, so they're an amazing animal.
Talking with Pat Webster after he announced his retirement, you mentioned the Clapper. Happy Clapper, the horse you will forever be synonymous with. And he gave you your first Group 1 win in the Epsom in 2017. We'll relive that finish and then I'll talk to you about what Clapper meant to you.
Tom Melbourne slicing through. Shin makes the move on Happy Clapper at the furlong. Happy Clapper takes the lead in the Epsom. Tom Melbourne's darting up the inside. Happy Clapper a length in front. Tom's running on well, but Happy Clapper hanging on in the Epsom. Happy Clapper, he wins his Group 1 today. Happy Clapper beats Tom Melbourne.
Oh, it had been a long wait for you and the Clapper. Did you think maybe you were going to finish your training career without that elusive Group 1?
I did, because it was like the dartboard. We beat all around the bullseye with the twos and the ones, like about 15, and also with the small string. I just didn't think it had ever happened. And he was 270 that day. Oh, God, I'd done it tough that week. I'd done it tough that day, because when he got the race, he's a bit naughty. He's always biting at the chain and kicking at the box. And he'd raced against Winks a fortnight before, and when we got there that day, I remember there was Paulie Semp, who was riding work for him, strapping, and Ainsley, who looked after Clapper. And when I walked on the track, I walked down, and they got their bottom lifts down. I said, what's up? They said, he's not the same. He's not biting the chain. He's, you know, not kicking the wall. And we'd hardly done anything with him because whenever you run against her, they was hard run. And I thought, oh, my God, you know. Of course, it was common knowledge that when horses run against Winks, they, some of them were never the same again. And Clapper run second to her five times. He backed up all the time. And I thought this day, you know, he's flat. So he drew a good alley and, you know, beat in at his best and everything went our way on the day. It didn't rain, the track was good. And, yeah, if there was a Lord, he was looking down on us that day and it was just amazing, absolutely amazing.
Was it what you dreamt it to be like?
Yes, but the Doncaster was different. The Epsom was great. And then he won another group, won the Canterbury Stakes. But the Doncaster was an entirely different kettle of fish. Of course, he'd run second to that twice. And then, I didn't think we'd get another chance, but we did.
Well, it meant so much to you because that's where you've spent all your career from a kid growing up. But let's relive that win of the Doncaster, and then I'll ask you about the Clapper himself.
Happy Clapper joins our beatsman Tom Melbourne coming through. Kemantari needs to left. Happy Clapper, the 175, trying to fend them off. Happy Clapper in front from coming through our beatsman Lanciato late. But Happy Clapper, runner up for the last 2 years. It's his day today. Happy Clapper takes out the Doncaster. Beat coming through and our beatsman.
Oh, what a special moment for the Clapper and yourself. And why was that race so special for you?
Well, when we were kids at Randwick, like, it was just a Doncaster, like, the Golden Slipper didn't mean anything to me, no insult, and neither did the Melbourne Cup. It's just, the Epsom was great, but the Doncaster was just the one race that, growing up as kids, it was just a magic race for us, and Clapper won it.
Mm.
I thought my heart was going to come through my chest that day. I did.
Are you a nervous watcher normally?
Oh, it's terrible. And I went to a lunching and, it is funny, but it's not funny. And I thought it was a men's only lunching and there's some women there and someone asked me the question. They said, well, was this the biggest thrill that you've ever had in life? And I always read and hear about people saying, no, the birth of the child when they go and watch their boy giving birth. And I did say I couldn't have cared if Chrissy was having triplets at Prince of Wales that day. I only wanted to be one place in the 200, and that was watching the Clapper.
What did and does the Clapper mean to you?
Well, what the amazing thing about it, when you talk about my drugs and alcohol, what I do there and our race mates, the Clapper's been amazing because he's through his profile with me, he's made that awareness out there with what we do really, you know, come to a head, so the thing, what he's done. It's been amazing what he's actually done for other people and to be able to better their lives through what we do. But if it hadn't been for Clapper, it would take us ages to get these things off the ground. And that's a breaking point with me when I go to do a counselling session with someone, you know what the first thing they say is, how's Clapper?
How's Clapper?
What's Clapper doing? Where's the Clapper? What's going on? And these are people, you know, that have got all these problems and the world's come to an end. And the first thing when you walk in the door or sit down at the table, that's the first thing they say. So hopefully his memories can live on. And as my beautiful daughter said, that Dad, they'll remember him forever. I said, why is that? She said, well, they'll be playing replays of Winks for years to come. And there's the Clapper. He might have been running second. She said, but he done it five times at group level.
Yeah. Smart girl, your daughter. She's absolutely right.
Yeah, too smart for her own good sometimes. She's listening too.
Hey, can you end with a fairy tale? Can Kosciuszko, your last runner, win on Saturday?
Well, I got an old mate that's been helping me out, John Burke. He's ex-assistant commissioner of police. Seems funny, don't it? An ex-warpy and a painter and docker and an assistant commissioner of police mixing together. But he's now 80 and he helps out the stables and he's part in this horse, Kosciuszko. And so we decided to put him in our first set of racing colours that we ever had, which was orange with the black Maltese cross and black hoop sleeves. And he run good first up. He didn't. He run last, but a good last. And then he had to trial again because he had a bit of a irregular heartbeat. So he trialled good the other day. And if he draws a barrier on Saturday, he should nearly win.
Well, we'll be cheering him home. He goes around at Newcastle on Saturday. Pat Webster's last ever runner as a trainer. A couple of quick ones before I let you go. Best horse you've seen, Pat?
Best horse seen is, well, I've got to say Winx, but very close to my heart, Kingston Down. He was an amazing horse. Yeah. But I have to say Winx because, and Black Caviar because the record's there. Like, but he was a freak, Kingston Down. And I've seen a lot of him because Spider Barker used to strap him. He was nowhere near sound. But so he was an amazing horse, Kingston Town.
And outside of Happy Clapper, what's the best horse you've had? You had some really nice horses. At Sea, another one that comes to mind?
Yeah, probably Ab Initio. He broke a 25-year-old track at William Browning. He won a TJ. I think he won four or five groups. You know, he was a great sprinter. He was only sort of ordinary bred. He's a very, looked a bit like a donkey, but he was a fast donkey. And, he was a great sprinter. And then same owner as Clapper, well, Rodney Quinson, but one of the best horses ever rode. He rode some good ones. There's a horse called Thank God You're Here. He was a very good horse.
Yeah. Best jockey?
Now or?
Yeah, or that you've seen.
James McDonald.
James McDonald?
Yep.
Oh, that's a big feather in James's cap. Pat,
on no disrespect, to old mate, I was sitting next to at lunch yesterday. He did win eight premierships, didn't he, Ronnie? And he's not listening. He won't forgive me.
He did. And just one last one. It might be difficult for you to answer, but because you've been through so much in racing and seen racing evolve, where do you see racing now, its place in society, and how is it going?
Well, the prize money's amazing. It's just it's mind-boggling, isn't it? The prize money's so good. So for owners to go out there and buy the horse and take the punt on taking that horse, like they can go out and spend a couple hundred thousand or a syndicate, and the syndicates are great. You might get 30 people in the syndicate. The old days are restricted to six, and there's too many rules and whatever. So it's really inviting now for people to get in. The prize money's sensational, and you know, it's worth the punt, isn't it? I'm thinking I might. Well, he tried to sell me a couple of shares in one yesterday, Ronnie, but I don't know if I'd like trainer. I might weak him because the prize money's amazing. Look at the Everest, and even your Wednesday races, your provincial races, and your Saturday races. Like, yeah, you. It's just out of this world. So it's worth the punt. And I think it's good for syndication. It's great for racing. You know, I think it's good for people to get into it. So that's where I see it. I mean, I'm not being an old codger as I am and sort of talking yesterday. It's a bit much for people like myself with the night meetings. If you're in the last, it's been a long day. And there's so many race meetings, but you got to have them where you turn over your tab is where your prize money comes from. So you can't you can't have it both ways. So I think racing's in a great place, and just for sheer weight of prize money.
Pat, congratulations on an amazing career and everything that you're doing off the track as well. It's good to see that you're not going to be lost to racing. You're going to continue with the mentoring and also the drugs and alcohol program as well. Enjoy retirement and best of luck with your last run at Kosciuszko on Saturday.
Yeah, and I must say thank you guys. It's been a really, really great journey or trip or any way you want to put it with the publicity that the Clapper and myself had and your listeners. And as I say, my darling daughter's listening today. It's been an amazing journey. We probably won't ever talk again, but I hope to meet you one day or you guys down there. And thank you very much for giving me your time over the years.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure for our listeners, and we'll talk again. You won't be a stranger to us. We'll be following up all the mentoring that you've got, and good luck to Diane and Chrissy dealing with you now in retirement as well. Enjoy it, Pat.
Thank you.